Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're going to be discussing the future of venture capital and the current conditions in venture capital. To do that, we're kindly joined by the team at Superseed in Mads Jensen and Dan Boyer. Mads and Dan, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Oh, thanks for having us.
We're going to be discussing all things VC and VC funds. Of course, as I mentioned, the current market conditions. But before we do that, let's get a bit of background, please, on Superseed, if possible. You're a London-based venture capital firm. Listeners to the podcast, of course, will be very much accustomed to different forms of venture capital and different vehicles. But would you please, guys, be able to give us a bit of an intro to Superseed, please? And you know, what sets you apart from other vehicles out there, other companies, other VC firms out there? And you know, what was the thinking behind Superseed when you started up?
Yeah, absolutely, Jonathan. So thanks for having us on the show. It's great to be here. Dan and I are both entrepreneurs by background. We have been in the software industry and in the tech industry for decades. We have built companies and we have experienced both the pleasure and also the challenges of building building businesses. And so a few years ago, we sort of thought, look, you know, our experience of working in tech is that there are a lot of investors. Most of them in Europe in particular are financial investors. And we sort of felt there was a need for a firm that was much more operator focused, operator led. And so that, you know, that became the genesis of Superseed, and Dan and I decided to build a firm really as a place where everybody has got a background in the startup scene. We've been in the trenches, we've worked on building companies, and so we know where the pitfalls are, and we try to use this experience to help the founders we work with, you know, accelerate the building of their companies. And we have a number of different ways in which we do that.
Our main focus, Jonathan, is the main kind of lens that we use is one of sales. So we in the early stages, as I'm sure I don't need to tell anybody that's listening to this, it's very, very treacherous, difficult, challenging in early stage tech. So we use sales and helping our founders think really commercially to not only help us see how they think before we invest, but also building really powerful go-to-market strategies that we help them apply once we have invested, so that we can really not shortcut is possibly the wrong word, but condense the timeline to Series A and product market fit. So we're all about commercializing founders. What we say behind the scenes is we help Americanize them. Americans tend to not care about much, just do the deal and it's fine and we go for it. Whereas across Europe and in the UK, we're very, very conservative. So that's where we tend to focus our kind of the value piece, if you like, our experience.
So how has this changed then over the last couple of months, maybe a few more months, actually, now looking at how the market has developed in 2022 so far? I mean, in terms of the VC industry for you guys, how's that developing? Obviously, there's been certain comments coming out recently about the state of the economy. They've been there for some time. We've discussed those in depth on the podcast. But for you guys on the front lines of venture capital, what have you seen changed over the past few months? And where do we find ourselves now?
Mads, do you want to pick this up?
So, you know, we have certainly seen things change a lot across the industry, and we've seen the it's kind of the way people talk about the sector change a lot in the last 6 months. I think the truth is that, you know, depending on what has been changing, that depends a lot on which part of venture people operate in. So which geography, which stage, which sector, whether it's a B2C company, whether it's a B2B company. And so the major thing we have seen change is that some of the kind of very late stage growth companies that have been growing very fast for several years, but where it was sort of questionable unit economics, We have seen those really come crashing down from a valuations perspective, because people have woken up to the fact that there's got to be a solid business model at the end of it. And so I think to some extent, so that's good news, we think, because that's not the place the part of venture we play in, but it was the part that sort of got a lot of press and a lot of focus, a lot of attention, and to some extent sucked the oxygen out of the rest of the venture ecosystem. So the valuations of those very late stage companies have come down. And what this means is that there is more oxygen, there's more focus for earlier stage companies and companies with better business models. And we think that's overall a good thing.
Fantastic. Thank you. Dan, do you have anything that you'd like to add to that with the backdrop of VC at the moment?
Yeah, I feel really passionately about this point. I like the fact that we've all had a bit of a rude, well, as an industry, we've had a bit of a rude awakening, because if you look, I mean, this has been going on for a long time. We've had a 14-year run of good times nearly. And if you look at venture and some of the nonsense that we as an industry have been investing in and fueling, and then all of the tourist cash, so all of the non-venture investors that have seen the returns that can be made upstream, they've piled in, and it fueled beyond it almost became the greater full version of venture, and it became quite comical, and it was obviously going to end. Somebody was going to be left holding the baby. So I've always been super passionate about real models and transforming business and helping founders really transform business, rather than some of the nonsense 2-minute grocery deliveries and faster e-scooters that we've seen catching the press and the airwaves. So this to me is a reset, but I think, as Mads said, this is not something that's massively affected us. We've seen it. We've been part of the party, but it's not been at seed. And especially in the UK, the UK and Europe is not the US. So if you actually look at the numbers and look at how the tech press has handled it and how the news has handled it, they've conflated a whole bunch of sectors, spaces, territories that have actually very, very little to do with us. So we're very quietly getting on with stuff behind the scenes and supporting founders doing, really transforming business and logistics and supply chains and manufacturing and all of the stuff that's going to make a difference. And that's what I feel super passionate about.
Taking that into consideration, I just want to drill down a little bit further in some of those comments there. Mads, you mentioned the valuations side of things. And Dan, you picked up there on the type of companies that are out there and are being funded. I mean, in terms of the impact going forward, are those trends that you see continuing, or do you think that's, very much possibly a short-term phenomenon, given that we're seeing a bit of a slowdown in markets, slowdown in sentiment generally? But, the overall impact on some of these companies, is there a big change to operations? And, is there been a big shift in the types of companies maybe VC and VC funds and including yourselves are looking for at the moment?
I mean, so there's lots to unpack there, Jonathan. Let's try and decompose some of the elements. So, are we seeing a general slowdown to the market now? I mean, if we look at sort of public sector markets, if we look at tech stocks in general, they're actually up 14-15% since the start of July. So we've not really seen a slowdown there. Actually, we've sort of seen a bounce back from a low. And there's a lot of discussion as to what will happen next there. Are we going to see inflation kind of creep back up again in the US? We see a lot of the core inflation started to come down. Oil has come down. Commodities have come down. The big discussion right now in the US is what's going to happen to the labor market. Will there be kind of labor market inflation that will put a pressure again on overall inflation rates? That means that interest rates will continue to go up or not. That is the big question. But right now, actually, kind of in the last sort of 6 weeks, stock markets have been performing quite well. Private markets, again, I would try and decompose it. Are we going to see a return to 2021? I don't expect so. I don't hope so. I think there was a lot of money chasing very questionable business models, or kind of models with very poor unit economics, and so investors have woken up to that and kind of realized that at the end of the day there's going to be positive cash flows, and some businesses are just you know, we're just never going to deliver that. So for those businesses, you know, I don't expect that they will have a quick rebound. But then there are other parts of the venture ecosystem that's completely different, which is about, you know, stable, you know, recurring revenue, long-term cash flows, you know, long-term contracts, you know, year-over-year growth, you know, still very solid growth. And I think those businesses are going to continue to do very well. So kind of lots to unpack. I think what sometimes may be a little bit unhelpful in both the financial press and also the tech press is when sort of people, they lump all of it into one big pot, because, you know, there's so many different things at play here, and I think they're gonna perform very differently in the years going forward.
And that's a very interesting point. They're making that, you know, differentiation there between public and private markets. And I think I'll pick up on what you said there, Mads, in terms of, you know, a lot of the negativity was largely priced into public markets earlier on this year. And as you said, we're starting to see things pick up again. But, you know, sort of focusing now on the private side of things, I mean, do you think there's maybe a lag between public and private markets? And, you know, is there any particular sectors within the private markets which are being impacted by, as you said, the headlines that are out there at the moment?
Absolutely. No doubt. There is a lag because, you know, unlike public, you know, listed companies, private companies are not being marked every day to a price. So they will typically only be repriced when they come up for some kind of refinancing. And that doesn't happen every day. That might happen every 12 or, you know, 15 or 18 months, 2 years. So there is a lag for sure. But I think some of it we've seen already. It was a big feature in the Financial Times last week about sort of this silent crash in venture capital, which is, it's been around some of these kind of late stage, you know, growth companies with very poor unit economics that had very inflated valuations on the back of growth. The big shift we have seen in how companies are being priced, both public and private, is that, you know, in 2021, companies were priced almost exclusively on growth. So it almost didn't matter how poor the sort of the cash flows were, how much money was being spent to grow. As long as they were growing, they were being priced very positively. And that's completely changed now, where you're seeing there's a much, much stronger focus on what we call efficiency. So it's the function of, yes, growth rates, but also the cash flows that companies are delivering. And kind of the insight is, it's okay for companies to be investing money, to have negative cash flows, as long as there's a good relationship between the cash that's being invested and the growth that's being delivered. So there was a complete decoupling of that in 2021. And that's kind of the recoupling we've seen now, where investors in both public and private markets are saying, fine to invest, great to spend money to grow the business, as long as there's a good relationship between the growth and the investment. And so the companies where that growth just wasn't there, that was spending too much, they've been marked down, and they are being marked down. And I think that's, you know, it's a good thing. And that's, it's kind of, it's happening, right? It's happening when these companies come up and they need to raise more money. Whereas other companies that have better business models, better unit economics, they haven't been suffered. They haven't been hit nearly as hard to the same extent.
Fantastic. So Dan, you picked up on revenue at the beginning, and just now, Mads, you've brought in positive cash flows on what people are, on what investors are looking for in companies, given that we're seeing a slight downturn in the wider economy at the moment. But is there anything else apart from that you'd like to see, and what you seek from companies, and what you're seeking from companies at this point in time to make sure that they're still here in 2023 and 2024?
Well, with our own portfolio, obviously we've been talking in two kind of main streams. One is, what's your plan? And what's your B plan? Because the first thing that's going to shift in any kind of bad news environment, as soon as we hit bear, is client behavior. That's the first thing that's going to shift. So that we are very, very conscious, and cash is survival. I personally believe that the smart businesses, and obviously I would say this, but we only invest in very smart founders doing very smart things. Those teams are going to grow through this. Those teams are going to find that white space. They're going to find the opportunities. They're going to leverage all of the competitive landscape that's sitting on their hands, or worried or panicking or doing other stuff. And they're going to find their way through and grow through this. So that's the first step. I mean, we see this the world fairly myopically, insofar as we've never played in the nonsense arena. We've only ever played in real business models solving real business problems. That's where we live, and this plays very much into our hands, where as specialist investors in what we do at a typically riskier stage of investment, seed is challenging, and the way that we invest and the process that we use. So this is our time to shine. This is the time to shine for the founders that we work with. So as the industry has woken up, the tourists have left the space, then and these real fundamentals shine through, then this is where we get to play, and our teams really get to make a move.
So I just want to talk to that point actually, Dan, because that's quite interesting there. And sort of moving on to the elements of the relationship between a fund such as yourself and a portfolio company, and we've touched on a couple of different points there, and you obviously highlighted that you're working quite closely with them. But I mean, how's that developing? I mean, do you see a greater need to work closer with these companies during this period? And you know, what does that actually look like? You know, in terms of support, you know, we've had various funds on here before, and there's always a talk about, you know, interaction and being involved with the company. But you know, what does that actually look like on a day-to-day basis? How are you sort of dealing with companies and helping them get through the current environment?
Well, the first thing to say is that and this will sound a bit wrong, and I don't mean it how it may be perceived, but most investors can't do that. I mean, if you look at the numbers in the UK, around 10% of early stage investors have even worked in a startup. So I think there is a massive disconnect between the available advice as a pure financial investor, and by all means, find me and slap me if you don't agree with this. But I cannot believe that if you haven't been there, done it, bought the T-shirt, that you're going to be all that useful in real times of trouble. So that might be a bit contentious, but that's what I believe. So in reality, we have two jobs with the founders that we work with. One is to get stuff out of the way. So to quite meaningfully remove a lot of the nonsense that founders might have on their mind that needs to happen. I'm not saying that they're nonsense jobs, but things like getting the financial modeling right. We have specialists that we work with that create incredible models that take that stress away from founders. They should be building their business. And sales leaders who can then help them build incredible go-to-market strategies. So it's, on one hand, it's getting stuff out of the way and creating space for them to be able to shine and do what they need to be doing. And the other, it comes down to two sub camps. One is there's quite a practical, we run a range of workshops, for example, where we'll look at positioning and brand and purpose and mission and strategic road mapping around how they're going to build this go-to-market strategy. And then there's the marginal gains stuff, which is the text messages at 10 o'clock on a Sunday night, or the constant little touches, which we're around for and can do en masse. I dare say there's not much we haven't heard over the combined maybe 30 years that Mads and I have been investing. So it's, and running businesses. So it's getting stuff out of the way. It's actively setting some ground schooling when and if required. And then there's the marginal gains piece, which is sometimes can be the difference between winning a deal or not winning a deal, or hiring the right person or not hiring the right person. So that's how we kind of operate. And it's very much a bespoke thing that every single founding team needs a very different flavor of. So it's not one size fits all.
So taking into consideration those factors that we just spoke about there, we spoke about the sectors, and we've just discussed there the power and the involvement that you have with the founders. But if we look at, you know, the current situation, I mean, where do you see, and probably more, who do you see coming out of this the strongest? Do you feel it's, you know, those companies, and let's just take into consideration here that we've ticked the boxes for, yes, they're generating revenue, and yes, they're positive cash flow, the two important elements that you've taken up there with the companies. But if we're looking at, you know, one side of it, the sector, and maybe that top-down approach, and in the other side, that the founder, a more bottom-up approach? I mean, for in your view, in the companies you're dealing with, and maybe looking at the wider market as well, you know, which one of those is going to be most important in dictating who comes out of this in good shape? Do you think it's more going to be about the sector, or do you think it's, regardless of the sector, if they've got a strong founder, we can see that that strength in these companies coming out the other side?
That's the age-old question, isn't it? Is it founders or is it the market? I think, you know, we're sort of delightfully ambivalent in that. We feel it both are really important because, you know, great markets, they can lift founding teams, and great founders can build, you know, new markets and new demand. I think, you know, who will come out strongest? It will be firms with strong unit economics. I wouldn't say that firms need to have strong cash flows. I mean, if they have, you know, positive cash flows, they don't need investors, right? Then they're generating cash. But they need to not have silly cash flows. They need to not burn so much money that it is completely out of kilter with the growth they're delivering. And so it's important that things are in balance, that there is a very well thought through plan, and that the underlying business fundamentals are sound. And so we think, you know, firms that have a, you know, good business models, sectors where that is possible. You know, we're software investors. We think that's a great place to invest. And then investors who know how to help founders build good companies, right? Because it's hard to build a good company. There's lots of stuff that goes into doing that. And, you know, for many founders, you know, they haven't, you know, they may have had a great, you know, track record in a sector and industry before, but this may be the first time they're building a business. And so if you haven't done that before, there are many pitfalls along the way. And if you have investors working alongside you that can help you avoid the worst pitfalls and figure out, you know, how to accelerate the business, that can be really helpful, especially in times like this.
Thank you. Dan, would you like to add anything to that?
I think Mads has fairly comprehensively covered it. I think just to pin down a couple of sectors and spaces that we're very excited about. I mean, if you look at like Russia, Ukraine as an example, all the supply chain mess that's ensued because of it, I think that as a singular point in time is going to be a great accelerant for any company that is thinking about how they manage logistics, supply, and being able to, obviously you couldn't predict that, but how you then manage the ensuing mess after. Anything in, I guess, in climate tech, anything in efficiencies in manufacturing. So I think there are going to be some very specific industries that are going to be, they're going to have a light shone on them. And it's timing. Timing is everything in startup, right? So all we do is find the teams that are on that zeitgeist, that are incredibly impressive teams that understand the space that they're serving. We help them focus on clients and obsess over clients, but they still have to be in the right space at that right time to catch that zeitgeist. And that, you know, if we knew the secrets of that, we'd all be, you know, living on yachts in the Seychelles with our diamond crusted glasses. But so it's about finding, and I personally believe that everything that we're seeing that is absolutely disrupting, changing, making us think, they're the spaces to be in, and they're the spaces that we serve and that we love. And there will also be some oddball outliers, like Airbnb came out of the GFC, and there'll be all kinds of these amazing little gems that we may or may not be able to invest in because of the type of business that they are. But there will be some odd fishes that come out that will serve, you know, people just being happy, because there's a lot of misery that's gonna hit people's lives with inflation and cost of living. So there'll be some odd, what I call the lipstick and chocolate brigade. There'll be something that makes us smile that will probably be a winner. So there'll be, and we can't invest in those kind of spaces, but there'll be those kinds of offerings that will come to the fore as well.
Thank you. Just to finish off here now, looking at the bigger picture of, you know, investors engaging with venture capital at this point in time. Now, of course, Superseed are about to embark on a partnership with Seeders, and subscribers to UK Investor Magazine would have already seen a couple of the communications that we put out there. But, you know, you're obviously on the front line of things. So there's two questions here, really, that I'd like to finish on. You know, first of all, you know, are investors, you know, still investing in, you know, private companies and venture capital at this point in time? And, you know, how are those trends playing out at this point? And what would you say to those people that maybe have looked at private companies in the past, but they're reading the headlines and thinking maybe now's not the best time to invest. What would you say to them this is a good time to start looking at private companies again?
Now's when the early stage. Sorry, Mads, I spoke over you. But listen, Mads has got some amazing sound bites in this, but this is where the magic is. This is truly where innovation happens. But Mads, over to you.
Yeah, no, I was just referencing your comments around some of the companies that came out of the financial crisis, a little over a decade ago, where some great businesses were built. I mean, typically the downturn is a time when some amazing businesses are started because, you know, when the going gets tough, the tough gets going, right? And real entrepreneurs get down to business. Some other interesting stats, the first half of 2022 was the most active period ever in UK venture. Okay, so this is despite sort of all this doom and gloom that we're talking about. There's never been more investments made in the UK than the last 6 months. Now, there's still some inertia. Numbers are likely to come down in the second half, but there's still a lot of capital being deployed. And it's likely that the second half of 22 will still be a very good month for venture capital in the UK, even if it's somewhat down in 21. So if we think now is a great time, there are great businesses that are going to do very, very well. It's possible to buy in, early at, in seed stage companies before the valuations have exploded, because there's less noise around some of the later stage businesses. That means it's easier for some of the earlier stage companies to attract talent, to bring in, strong developers, strong sales teams and build up their businesses. And we just think right now is a really, really good time to build a business. And so I think anybody that likes technology and want exposure to this, this is a terrific time to get engaged.
Indeed. And I think one of the things that you've really highlighted in this podcast is the valuation side of things. And Dan, you alluded to it. Last year we had quite elevated valuations, but during this period, companies such as yourselves and venture funds are able to secure those lower valuations when things may be a little bit tough for some of the founders out there. So that's historically, if you look back and some of the studies that I've been looking at recently, when you see a downturn, and of course you get the big companies, excited companies, as you mentioned there in Airbnb, but typically the valuations look a little bit more attractive. So Dan and Mads, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
So just before we finish up, we're going to put in the notes to this podcast a link through to your website. But for people that want to know a little bit more about Superseed, what's the best way of going about finding some information, getting in touch and keeping up to date with what you guys are doing?
Well, the first thing to say is so Cedars has been great. So we've already hit target at Cedars, but if anyone's interested in the Cedars campaign that's running, you can just search us on Cedars. It's in the private deal room. Obviously, the website you mentioned, superseed.com, where Dan and Mads at, just imaginatively. Just drop us a line. We're very active on LinkedIn. Give us a shout if there's anything we can talk about with regards to fund investing, startups, the ecosystem, the community. Super keen to talk.
Great. Mads, would you like to add anything to that to finish off?
No, it's been a pleasure being here today, Jonathan. Thanks for having Dan and I on the show, and thanks to the listeners for taking time to listen to our little chat here. Looking forward to hopefully engaging with many more of you on LinkedIn and other social media, on Cedars and other investment fora.
Fantastic. Thank you. Likewise, it's been a pleasure to have you both on this afternoon for the podcast. Thank you very much.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember all investment involves risk.